Time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. I am your anchor. It's an ensemble show, and of course, the host is Carol Marks. And Carol is going to be speaking here with Sylvia Hawthorne Deppin as we kick off this hour. She's a licensed practical nurse, passionate about helping others live comfortably despite illness. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Wheel, A Recovery from Chronic Pain and Discovery of New Energy. It's published by Balboa Press.
Now, you write in your introduction, why, when two or more people are exposed to similar circumstances, diagnosed with the same illness at the same time, one succumbs quickly and the other stays in good health. Can you tell us about the two women who were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at nearly the same time and yes. What happened to their quality of life?
Well, the one young woman, she was diagnosed with it and almost immediately seemed to succumb to it by having everybody do things for her. And, you know, I would go to visit her, and it was just so sad to watch her go downhill. The other young lady that was diagnosed, I was working with her in the grocery store, in the deli, and she had a little girl that she had to support, and she had to keep working. And I noticed she stayed well for a long time. She's still at it. And the other woman just seemed to give up. And it occurred to me that there's so much importance in how we think about our illness and our dis-ease that we're diagnosed with. And that when it's necessary for us to stay active and involved, people seem to do much better. I've seen that in Parkinson's also. And that's why I wrote that, as an encouragement to anyone that is diagnosed with an illness to not get into, I'm going to go downhill, things are going to get worse. I don't want people to slide into that helpless mode that happens just too often.
You are so right. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your life and the bad experience you had when you were six. What happened, and did you have no memory of it for 45 years?
45 years, yes. I went on and on with these strange symptoms, you know, spasms in my face and chest pain. I was like having a heart attack when I work as a nurse. And I went on that way all those years, not knowing there was even, for a long time, not knowing there was something wrong with me. I thought it was normal, and I just didn't know how to live with it, you know. And then finally, when I was in and out of the hospital, in the psych ward, a lot, 27 times, 21 years, and going downhill, downhill, I went for 14 years drinking, trying to numb the pain with alcohol, which I almost hit a woman driving drunk and stopped just overnight, stopped the drinking. But at the same time, the psychiatrist started putting me on narcotic tranquilizers and then along with that, narcotic pain pills. So I literally went from the frying pan into the fire when that happened. So in and out of the hospital these years, and finally in 1998 is when I just threw up my arms and said, God, I need to know what's wrong with me, what happened to me. And the miracle was, for the first time, I asked. I just plain asked. And the blessing was 2 months later when I woke up at 2 a.m. and in a dream relived what happened as a little child. And it came back to the finest details as to what I was wearing, what was happening, and I had come home from school at noon, first grade, found my brother and his friend Jackie playing in the stairwell, and the lady at the bottom of the steps, our cleaning lady, chased them away, but she didn't see me a few minutes later slip out on that ledge because, it looked like fun. And as kids will do, I did it and fell head first into that stairwell and managed to, I hit it because my parents were business people and didn't have time for problems. So I managed to hide it not only from them, but from myself. But I guess the real miracle was there that I asked.
And then you remembered, and actually you fell 9 feet in that stairwell, and probably that resulted in some sort of traumatic brain injury, and that resulted with a lot of your symptoms.
And
it also led you to, you know, react in lots of different ways with behavior that certainly wasn't helpful to you. And in your book, you write about one of the most whimsical and ill-advised decisions I ever heard of, and that was when you ran away from nursing school with a man you'd known less than 48 hours.
Yes.
What did you learn about him, and how did this so-called journey end?
He was like my messiah at that point. I needed someone to take me out of where I was and who I was. I didn't know who I was. And that young man being a sociopath was just the opposite for me. As a middle child over the years, I never knew how to ask for what I needed. And here was someone who was saying to me, well, just take what you want. And he took me away with that premise. You know, I could just take what I wanted. And, whoa, did that get us into trouble. But, you know, you look back 40 years later and you see the scope of what was going on. And that's why I think just about anyone, you get to a certain age, especially over 50s, and it is so valuable to write memoirs, to remember things, and start to put them together.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Sylvia, about, you know, writing a memoir. It's certainly therapeutic, and I wanted to, you know, go into a little bit more detail about what you found out in August of 2002, I guess when you were cleaning out your car, and you found something that really helped you with your chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2002 was, I had been really forced to get off all the narcotic pills I was on. It was a dreadful detox, but as a result, I was forced to live life on life's terms. And I had found those tapes because I was cleaning up the car, and I remembered throwing them there because at the time all I wanted was the pills. I didn't like the idea of being told I needed to do meditation for the pain. I just take pills. That's all I want, you know. When I found these tapes, I had no other recourse, so I took them in the house, started listening, and my whole life changed through those breakthrough pain tapes.
And really started your whole healing process. And
oh my, yeah. I just realized that instead of escaping the pain through the pills and running away and even all the hyperactivity, instead of escaping it, I needed to learn to move through it by relaxing. And
meditating, really.
Yeah.
Now, you've said chronic pain is like having a full-time job, and I know you're no longer working as a licensed practical nurse in a hospital, so what kind of work are you doing now?
I do some that is so valuable to me. I work with older people who want to stay in their homes instead of going to nursing homes or you know, elderly settings, because homes are what they're familiar with, and when a caregiver goes in for just a few hours a day, it changes that elderly person's life. And I guess I just connect with them so much because I'm getting older too. So that's what I do today, and it's just so satisfying to me.
Sylvia Hawthorne Deppin, in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Wheel, A Recovery from Chronic Pain and Discovery of New Energy. It's published by Balboa Press. If you want more information, you can actually email Sylvia, and she'll send it to you, or at least she says she will. Email Sylvia Hawthorne Deppin at isurvivedchronicpain@gmail.com. More interviews conducted by Carol Marks coming up next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We continue with this hour number two of our big two-hour weekend get-together. And if you want more information about the show, you want to hear some of the old interviews, some of the programs in the archives, more about Carol Marks, its host and founder, go to atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. Here now is the aforementioned Ms. Marks in conversation with a gentleman named Donald McDonald. Sounds somewhat familiar, but not quite sure. Donald McDonald. He's an award-winning architect, and he's the author of Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon, published by Chronicle Books.
What motivated you to write the book?
Well, what it is that I've been on the bridge for just about, 16 years, and there's a lot of information that I thought the public should be aware of in the design of bridges, especially signature-type bridges. In other words, I did a book on the Golden Gate Bridge years ago, and I explained to the public, you know, how that's put together from an artistic point of view. And I felt that on this new bridge with so much notoriety to it that I should explain how an architect works with engineers and the environment. And so I put the book together just to give a layman an idea what goes on.
Now, the original Bay Bridge opened in 1936, and through the years to increase traffic, it got realigned, and it had innovations such as a metered traffic light system. What was the event that occurred in 1989 that made a replacement absolutely necessary?
I think the old bridge, the East Bend in particular, was quite a rigid system. It was a truss, and between the low part of the truss system and the high part, there's a section in there that collapsed in the Loma Prieta. And the earthquake wasn't moving just back and forth like most people would think. It had a vertical vector, like it moved upward as well. And that really caused the decks to open up and then collapse. And from then on, there was other damages on the bridge because there are many thousands and thousands of parts to that type of bridge. And to fix that would, you know, in essence, they might as well build a new bridge, and that's how it started.
Now, there was a competition, and it came down to two plans to build a new Bay Bridge, and your plan, which called for part of the bridge having a self-anchored suspension span, was chosen. And how is a Bay Bridge different from a conventional suspension bridge? And which cables anchor on the shore, and why was it impractical to have cables anchor on the shore?
One of the things that created the winning design, the idea of a suspension bridge in general, is that the other bridges in the Bay Area, the West Bands and the Golden Gate, are these suspension bridges. And even there's another bridge, the Richmond-Santa Fe Bridge, has a catenary form. That's a curve that if you hold a string between your two fingers, that form it takes is called a catenary. And so it was, the idea would continue the necklace of elements are out there already. So, and the other design that lost the competition was called a cable-stayed bridge, and that's a bridge that has cables, but the cables are straight lines. They don't have that curve on them. So that was the real difference. And the self-anchoring suspension bridge, really, to answer your question, you couldn't anchor it into the ground because there's no ground to anchor it in out in the water. They're just deep mud. And so you have to anchor it back into the deck. And what happens is the cable comes down to the deck. When the cable's parallel to the deck, the vertical force drops out and you just have a horizontal force, and so you pull that back into the deck. And so on the other end, they have a similar situation that happens on the west end. The east end is what I'm talking about. Initially, then the west end, the cable goes down, wraps around, and it's weighted down so it balances up the other side. And then there are elements that do go into the ground, and those are tying into the ground to act like a frame to carry that part of the bridge in case there's an earthquake.
So I can see how this bridge, getting it designed, was very complicated and very challenging. Now, getting back to earthquakes, certainly California is earthquake prone, and so it's far from an ideal place to string metal over water and hope it stays put. So are there any unique ways that the bridge is designed to withstand these earthquakes, which are going to happen?
Yeah, one thing to remember is that suspension bridges, in general, are a little more flexible than a cable-stayed bridge or a truss bridge, and those are more rigid frames or rigid-type structures. So you have that flexibility already built into the cable system. But on this bridge, there's, like in the long viaduct, which we call a skyway, there are hinges, and that there's five of them, and those act like joints that can move in an earthquake. And in the main tower itself, there's what they call link beams. The tower has four legs on it. There's elements between those legs that are made out of a milder steel. And so if there's any movement in the legs, the shock will take place in this link beam. And if it ruptures, you can come back and replace it, but the bridge can still stay in operation. So it's got some very unique features. And it's really, I'm not an engineer, but I've been around long enough, I guess I can talk a little bit about it. But,
and, you know, maybe eventually some of these innovations can be used to help buildings withstand earthquakes. So you never know.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that's gone on. There's dampers and isolators and things like that that have gone into buildings. And the Golden Gate, for instance, has some new dampers that were put into it a few years ago to, you know, take care of another earthquake.
Now, by the way, how long do engineers think that the new replacement Bay Bridge is going to last?
Well, it's designed to at least go 100 years, so, and if it's properly maintained, I'm sure it'll go more than that. I mean, as you know, the Golden Gate is over 75 years old now, and it's still in great shape, so it's a good example of, if you take care of a bridge, how long it'll last.
The tower on the bridge you've written is the most important critical design. So how did the Saturn V rocket influence your design for that tower?
Well, what happened was that when I was designing the tower in particular, and even the airfoil shapes of the decks and that, is that I wanted some image that I thought would be, you'd see in the 21st century, in essence. And I felt that the only thing I could think of is in the next 50, 100 years or something, there would be, you know, rocket activity, and that would be quite a prominent structure. And I looked at the tower when we were first formulating, and I said, well, this looks a bit like a rocket. And so I started looking at, for rockets, and I found the Saturn V. It's 1959, even though it's a bit old. And there are a lot of features in that rocket that I could use in the bridge, and that's sort of how it came about.
Now, you've written that color also is important. It unites the elements of a bridge. So why do you call this bridge the White Span? What does color do for a bridge?
Well, in this case, if you know the Golden Gate has a, it's got a, they call it international orange, but sort of a terracotta. And that color is picked up in the cliffs that are just beyond the bridge. It's, there's an iron pyrite in there that rots out. It ties into that. So on the other side of the bay, I wanted the city of Oakland to have some sort of imagery, and they have these white cranes in Oakland in the harbor that take containers off of ships, and it's quite prominent. And so I felt that if that bridge was white and it tied into the whiteness of the cranes, it would have its own landmark. And even now, I think in the book, I've mentioned in the book that there's the national basketball team, the Warriors, have it on their jerseys and on their shorts and things like that, the imagery of the bridge. So it's already starting to develop, you know, some kind of imagery and signature, and it's branding that part of the bay with a bridge.
Now, there's been a lot of annoying, time-consuming political delays when it came to building the bridge, and the latest has involved some construction glitches. You think the bridge is going to open when it's supposed to, I think, what, in early fall? Or?
Yeah, it's supposed to open Labor Day, and that's in the first part of September, and that's pretty well up in the air right now. There's been some problems with the bolts, and so they're working that out. It could open. I mean, they've said it probably won't, but they're not 100% sure yet. So I think in the next week or two, we'll hear something.
And so you've been working on the new Bay Bridge since 1997. What's it going to be like for you when the old Bay Bridge is demolished into the water and the last piece of your new bridge drops into place?
I think what it'll be interesting is the old bridge, you know, occupies a horizon. It's quite a bulky thing, and the new bridge is very slender and slim, and I think it'll be a relief to see all that mass get out of the water and out of visual corridors and get this new slim line out there. So I think it'll be a real improvement of the bay, and it'll tie a lot nicer in with the west span, so it'll be more consistent with the other bridges in the Bay Area.
That's Donald McDonald, an award-winning architect, author of Bay Bridge, History and Design of the New Icon, published by Chronicle Books. The interview, of course, was conducted by the host and founder of this program, Carol Marks. I'm Michael Harrison. We're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, for the rest of the way. That's coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as we move into the final half hour of our big two-hour weekend get-together. And we're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just a few moments from now is going to be talking with Dr. Heather Snyder. She's a Ph.D. She's Director of Medical and Scientific Operations at the Alzheimer's Association. And she's going to talk about the latest in Alzheimer's and dementia research from the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. That's coming up next. And Richard, certainly a topic that is one that I guess is of pressing importance to people in our upper demographic constituency.
Absolutely. And the good thing is that Heather will talk about, you know, there is no cure for Alzheimer's. I think we all know that. However, there's been some research done about delaying the onset, if that is going to happen, and slowing down the progress. So there is some hope. There is some good research being done, and Heather will talk about that.
Very good. We look forward to that. And then after that conversation, Richard will be joining us again for some closing words at the end of the program. Richard Neer, I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, which continues on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare.
Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, and it's time to listen to Richard Neer interview Dr. Heather Snyder. She's a PhD. She's director in medical and scientific operations at the Alzheimer's Association, and she's going to talk about the latest in Alzheimer's and dementia research from the Alzheimer's Association International Conference.
There's some very interesting news coming out of this conference due to some research that they've been doing of late, and Dr. Snyder, the most interesting to me is the fact that you're saying that now people who have had cancer and those who have undergone chemotherapy treatments actually have a significantly decreased risk of Alzheimer's. Explain.
So this is a study that was presented at the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference looking in a large number of people, so over 3.5 million veterans, and looked at different types of cancer as well as the type of treatment that an individual had, whether it was chemotherapy or radiation, and found that those that underwent chemotherapy or radiation actually had a decreased incidence of Alzheimer's disease. We don't really understand how these two diseases may be connected, but it certainly opens up the door for further investigation about what may be the pathways or the biology impacted by chemotherapy or radiation that may be beneficial in Alzheimer's disease as a possible therapeutic target for investigation.
Now, you talked about some cancers. Which cancers did you find are particularly lower the risk?
So they looked at all different types of cancers. They looked at lung cancer, liver cancer, for example, and they found that those were linked to a decreased risk. They also did show that prostate and skin cancer seem to be linked to an increased risk, but the research group actually discussed this as a factor of because those are things that are readily screened for and that those are things that were identified in this population early, that may explain what the linkage potentially could be. But it certainly opens up that door for further study.
A lot of the women in our audience would certainly like to know if ovarian and breast cancer are involved in that.
I believe they were linked into the study, although because of the population that was studied, even though it was 3.5 million individuals and looking in veterans, it was from a primarily male population.
Gotcha. So that wouldn't necessarily apply. Now, the other thing, and this is something we've thought for a while, older age of retirement is associated with reduced risk, and we think that if you keep active, increased brain activity, crossword puzzles, social interaction, even playing cards or something that really requires you to use your brain lowers the incidence. Is that correct?
So that's really the idea. And this was in another fairly large study, over 400,000 people, and they looked at older age of retirement. But it could be that idea of not necessarily working longer, but more staying mentally engaged, so things that promote lifelong learning. I know my parents are retired. They're in their early 60s, and they're incredibly active. They're taking classes at their local university. They're avid readers. They're involved in community activities. They sit on different committees. And they're also incredibly physically active. They live in Colorado. They're avid skiers. Play golf regularly. So they're, even though they're retired, they're continuing to stay mentally and physically engaged.
Now, there seems to be a racial component to this, or is it more socioeconomic, do you think?
So we've known for a number of years that there is this link to an increased risk for African Americans as well as Hispanics, about 2 times greater likelihood for developing Alzheimer's disease in African Americans, and about 1.5 times greater likelihood for developing Alzheimer's in Hispanics. But this one study that was presented from a group in California actually looked at what may be the factors making up that difference. And they found that socioeconomic factors, things like financial literacy, level of education, may be playing a role. And really, although the study wasn't designed to specifically understand which of those socioeconomic factors were playing a role, it opens up the door that we need to better understand what may be a factor so that we can look at potential interventions.
Yeah, and when you talk about socioeconomic, I wonder if dietary considerations factor into that, because one assumes socioeconomic lower on the ladder, the diet probably isn't as healthy as those who are more advantaged.
It may, although this particular study didn't look at that. And we do know, however, that a diet low in saturated fats, dark leafy vegetables, things like that, seem to be linked to a decreased risk or potentially reducing an individual's risk of Alzheimer's disease. So it may be a factor, although, again, this particular study didn't look at that.
Okay, now there are online tests for Alzheimer's, and you basically have decried most of them. Tell us why.
Well, this is, you know, there's a number of tests. You see them in your email or you see them on the web. One study that was presented at the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference looked at 16 of these online tests. And through using an expert panel, looked at the ability of how scientifically sound they were, as well as the ethics behind them in terms of the privacy of the individual. And what they found was that they actually, by this expert panel, scored fairly poorly. If you're concerned about changes in your memory or changes in your pattern of behavior, or of either yourself or a loved one, the Alzheimer's Association would encourage you to speak to a healthcare professional. Have that conversation, and you can find out more about the top warning signs of Alzheimer's disease on our website at ALZ.org.
Dr. Snyder, a lot of us experience what we call senior moments. We joke about it, but underlying that is a concern that it could be a harbinger of Alzheimer's, and I just wonder if you could, quickly give us some guidelines where things are maybe just forgetfulness that happens with age or something to really be concerned about.
Well, a good example is I lose my keys regularly, so for me that wouldn't be a change in my behavior. I actually couldn't find them this morning, so that wouldn't be something that would necessarily indicate something to me that I should be concerned. However, I also avidly balance my checkbook. It's something, regardless of online banking, I still like that paper registry, and I balance my checkbook every Saturday. If I have a difficulty or start to notice difficulty with that particular task, that to me may be a sign that I should seek a healthcare professional. My husband, on the other hand, has never balanced a checkbook. So he couldn't do it 10 years ago, and he probably won't be able to do it in 10 years. So for him, that probably would not be an indicator. But he does compose a lot of emails and a lot of draft memos and things like that. And I've talked to individuals that have told me that for them, word retrieval was one of the first signs that they knew that something was not right, that they had difficulty when they were composing those emails or putting together those memos in identifying what the word choice that they needed was.
Mm. I say that because sometimes I'm thinking, okay, what's that word? It's on the tip of my tongue. I'm looking for that precise word, and sometimes it doesn't come, so... I guess that's something.
Well, me as well, but it's more of a change in that pattern. So for him, that was not something that he had ever experienced before.
Yeah, and that's really the key, the change. And the other thing, too, is, and I've been through this because my mother suffers from Alzheimer's, the denial, the fact that people tell you, hey, you just asked me that question. No, I didn't. And how do you convince someone who is repeating and showing obvious signs of dementia that they actually are doing this as opposed to, no, you're making it up, which I heard a million times with my mom.
Right. Well, I think it's really a matter of how a family deals with the care situation of the particular individual. And we know that families that have different strategies for living with their loved one or helping to provide care and support for their loved one affected by Alzheimer's disease, there's different strategies out there. I can tell you in my own family, when we take our son to visit my husband's grandmother who has Alzheimer's disease, every time it is the first time that she's meeting him. And every time we go through that process multiple times in the hours that we're there, introducing her to him. And each time she's very happy with that. And so we just go through that process each time with her. That's how we as a family have chosen to deal with that. But every family is different, and you can access, you can talk to a healthcare, a master's level clinician on different strategies that may work for your family, and the Alzheimer's Association offers those through our helpline at 1-800-272-3900.
A lot of people believe that Alzheimer's is genetic, and there's nothing you can do, and there's nothing you can do to ward it off, or once you have it, there's nothing that can be done. There is no cure, obviously. But what are the things prior to showing any symptoms that one might do to possibly ward it off?
Probably the best evidence is physical activity, and that's really what the research has consistently shown us in a number of studies all around the world, is being physically active, engaging in physical activity seems to be beneficial. There also seems to be a benefit regardless of when you start that. We've seen studies that have looked at individuals that already are experiencing changes in their memory that show some benefit related to being physically active and physically engaged. Other studies or other hints that we have in the literature are being cognitively engaged, so things like mental stimulation, the idea of the older age at retirement and continuing to be engaged and using your brain for things with lifelong learning. Staying socially engaged, continue to be engaged in family and friends and things in your community. And then a heart-healthy diet, so things like dark leafy vegetables, low in saturated fats, those really seem to also have some hints that there's potential reduction of risk of Alzheimer's.
Yeah, and there seems to be a link with these amyloid proteins. And I wonder if are we any closer to any kind of physical test, a blood test other than Q&A and questionnaires and things like that? Are we close to anything that might physically be able to detect Alzheimer's or the onset?
So there's been substantial advances in early detection and diagnosis for Alzheimer's disease using different modalities, whether it's using imaging of the brain and changes related to imaging of the brain, looking in cerebral spinal fluid, which is the fluid that our brain sits in, and you can detect changes in the protein. And there are a number of studies that are trying to look at developing that blood test, and we actually had a number of sessions looking at those types of studies and where that research is that were presented at the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference. Although at this point in time, that's still a little bit early in development, and the field is looking at what are the next steps. And with all of these, one of the key points is standardization. So being able to know that whether I'm in Chicago or Boston or Paris, the measurement will be the same and will mean the same thing, like with cholesterol, like what we have with cholesterol today.
That's Dr. Heather Snyder, Ph.D., in conversation with Richard Neer. And if you want more information, go to ALZ.org. That's www.alz.org or call 800-272-3900. Thank you, Richard Neer. And Richard Neer is going to come back for some final words when we head into the final segment of this two-hour get-together on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for Grimes.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we come to the final segment of this big two-hour get-together, and we are joined again by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who, as many of you know, is an expert on a lot of topics. He also is a sportsman and does a sports talk radio show on one of the biggest sports talk stations in America every week. And, Richard, I'm sure that the fact that you are on the radio in New York City on Sports Talk, that people are talking about Alex Rodriguez, also known as A-Rod.
You think?
He
has dominated the conversation, obviously, in addition to the others who were suspended because of their HGH and steroid use. But the other thing that gets to me, Michael, is that baseball is really, really trying to clean up the game, unlike other sports. Remember there was a report a couple of weeks ago that, basketball players were at Biogenesis and football and other sports. Have we heard one peep from their commissioners that, oh, well, we're going to get to the bottom of this? No, they kind of just let it go away.
Well, I'll tell you, it seems like this thing goes through cycles and waves of where the public cares or the press cares or they don't care. I mean, I think even to a certain degree the fans are they're sort of co-conspirators in this. I have very mixed feelings about it. You know, all the money, all the pressure, all the attention to winning, all the attention to breaking records. And then you go and you take these young fellows who are in a culture, they're surrounded by their peers that do it. They have incredible stress. And then this happens. I don't know.
The temptations are great, Michael. But, you know, the interesting thing is that had they not been able to link these guys to Biogenesis, think about it. only 3 or 4 guys were exposed because of testing, which to me means that the testing's really not working very well. You know, that a third or a quarter of the people that eventually were guilty and they admitted it and they took their punishment were found out from testing. So the logical step from that is there are probably a whole lot more, because Biogenesis wasn't the only place where you could get these drugs. There are probably several others. So there probably were, let's say, 50 guys who were doing it, maybe more, and only 4 guys were caught through the tests.
Do you think that they're going to roll back the record books and just go back to Roger Maris and Hank Aaron?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think the records will stand. I've always said I hope that there is some kind of preface to the record book saying that the era from 89 to 2000, whatever, was known as the steroid era, so any record set during this time must be taken into context. But they probably won't even do that.
Or do you think the day will ever come when the culture will change and steroids will be legal? In other words, they'll do whatever you have to do to build yourself up because you're a public spectacle. You're owned by the fans, and you're owned by the owners, and you're owned by the pop culture, and you choose to do that, and you're a grown man. So to knock yourself out and do whatever it takes to be a winner. Is that possible in your mind?
No. The reason I can't support that is that
I didn't say support it. Do you think it's possible it could happen?
I doubt it. Because what it does is it means that you must do them then. If you are competing with people who are cheating and getting an edge on you, if you're a little guy like a Pedroia, let's say, you can't compete with these guys. If they're dirty and you're clean, all these marginal guys are going to be out of the game, and the only guys that will make it are guys who are doing it, and I don't think we're ready for that.
Thank you, Richard. Very interesting indeed. These are fascinating times. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent, thank you very much. Beverly Santinello, thank you for the fine job you do on the front line as our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and guiding spirit of the program. Thanks to Kevin Casey, Steve Wiseman, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.